Salo Falava. I'm Afamasanga Seyuli Salamasina Von Reiki, and I'm inviting you to join me on a journey through the evolution of our Pacific cultures on Culture Compass. We'll meet incredible people dedicated to preserving traditions while adapting them for today's world. Join me as we travel the Pacific to celebrate our resilience, revival, and deep-rooted connection.
Search for Culture Compass wherever you get your podcasts to listen.
This is an ABC podcast.
This is Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Bobby McCumber. Imagine failing high school on purpose. Not because you couldn't succeed, but as an act of protest to defend comics as a true art form. That's exactly what Samoan artist and wrestler Mikael Mulipola did. Born and raised in South Auckland, Mikael turned childhood obsessions with comics and wrestling into a career that has spanned Marvel Comics and nearly 20 years in the wrestling ring. His art and activism are steeped in Samoan heritage, his storytelling both playful and political. Whether behind the drawing table or under the bright lights of the ring, Mikael embodies Pacific creativity with unapologetic pride. Mikael, welcome to Stories from the Pacific.
Hello, Leslie Four. Thank you for having me.
Your comic journey began when you discovered your uncle's comic book collection, titles such as Rom the Space Knight, The X-Men and Green Lantern. If you can remember, can you tell us about that moment when comics first grabbed you?
Well, it was before I started school. So I was like probably like 3 or 4 years old. And I just love drawing. And I've always found that everybody draws at such a young age. Everybody draws because drawing is one of the first ways we are able to kind of communicate before we can even like say words or speak. Drawing how we feel and what we like was just kind of a natural thing that everyone does. And so I was of that age where all I did was draw. And so discovering like these comics and the artwork and the bright colors, bold characters, it just kind of ignited my imagination. I was like, I want to do that. Like that was the start of the obsession. It was just a creative kid coming across such a brilliant and I guess kinetic, energetic art form. It was just like, yo, we're just on my impressionable, malleable, young mind. And so that's kind of how it happened. And so, yeah, it's weird. Like, as I said, everybody draws and then they kind of just stop doing it. I just never did. I kept going. So that's kind of how I end up where I am. It's just like, I've just been drawing all my life.
Can you recall the very first comic book character that made you think like this, that is incredible?
There's comics that that still stick in my mind from when I was a kid. Like Rom the Space Knight, X-Men, 2000 AD, all of that stuff, like these characters just kind of leapt out of the page and into my mind. So I think it was just the dynamic kind of particularly superhero comics and the action and the way they're depicted just really, again, just ignited something within me. So I can't remember the first ever character, but I can remember a whole bunch of characters that really informed who I am. A lot of it was X-Men. I love X-Men. So it's that kind of stuff. Like it was just comics in general. It wasn't necessarily a particular character. It was the medium itself that inspired me.
Do you have a favorite all-time character or it's...
Yeah, my favorite all-time superhero is Green Lantern, a DC Comics character. And funny enough, I fell in love with the character as a little kid because of these action figures I was collecting. DC Superpowers by Kenner. And I remember going to the comic store and the toy store, and on the shelf there was Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Flash, and Green Lantern. And Green Lantern stood out to me as a kid because he was different. Because unlike the other characters, he didn't have any primary colors. So he didn't have any blues, reds, or yellows. He was green, black, and white, and had a cool mask. So because he looked different and stood out, like my little mind was like, oh, who is this guy? And so that's where my love for the character kind of began, was because of this difference in design. And as I grew older and I read more Green Lantern stories, I realized I had a deeper connection to the character. So with Green Lantern, he wears a power ring. and using sheer willpower and imagination, it brings to life whatever you can think of. So if he's thinking about like punching a bad guy, he'll think about a boxing glove, and then the boxing glove would form from the ring, and he'll use it to knock out the bad guy. And so I realized as an artist that I was Green Lantern. It's like my pen, my pencil, that's my powering. And using sheer willpower and imagination, I bring to life whatever I can think of through my artwork. And so I've been really fortunate to have like brought so many creations from the comic book page into real life. And one of the main ones is my wrestling character, Liger, which started off as a comic book character I created, which kind of was a way for me to live the dream of being a pro wrestler. But then I turned that character into a real life pro wrestler, and now I've been wrestling for almost 20 years. So again, it's just that whole artists are able to transmute ideas into action. And that's one of the things I love about it.
Yeah, sounds like it. Now, we briefly mentioned you deliberately failing a subject in high school as a form of protest. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, it's funny because thinking back on it, like I didn't realize it was a protest. But it was definitely something that meant a lot to me. And I guess integrity is a big thing for me, especially as an artist and as a human. And so thinking back about like my journey into activism, I was like, oh, actually the first time I really was kind of standing up for something I believed was right was high school. And so in high school art design, my final year of art design, all my life I had really great art teachers. They knew me, they loved me and whatnot. But because I was drawing comics, an art form they had no real understanding of, whenever I was creating work, it was always kind of like, it didn't get it. They just never could get it. Even though they knew me and they knew what I wanted to do, they couldn't quite grasp the art form and all of the nuances and stuff. And this was back before comics were kind of embraced by literary circles, education, libraries and stuff. This was back when comics were seen as juvenile and just lowbrow art. And so in my final year of high school, I was doing art design and I was like, oh, I want to make a comic. And so I started kind of developing a comic and my teacher was kind of pushing back on stuff. And I realized, oh, why would I spend the whole year making a comic? And if my art teachers who know me don't get it, why would strangers in Wellington who are marking this work, how are they going to get it? And so for me, I was like, what's the point? Like, what's the point in putting all the effort into something that's just going to be, you know, marked down because they don't understand the art form? And so I did one board. You're supposed to do four. I did one board and then I just quit. I just decided not to do anymore. As a form of protest, because I just couldn't understand how a subjective, you know, subject like art can be judged by random people that don't know you, don't know your story. And so, yeah, that's how I failed. I just submitted one board. I got full marks for the board. I got 25%. but like, I was just like, I didn't care because yeah. What I was learning in art class wasn't what I wanted to do in art. You know what I mean? So I was like, that mark doesn't affect the work I want to create. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I felt at. I decided to just not put an effort for a curriculum that I just didn't support.
How did your teachers respond to your deliberate protest?
I know my teacher was annoyed a lot because I was just mucking around. Oh, no. And funny enough, I did visit my old high school a few years ago, and they were still there. And I think they kind of remembered me because they looked at me like, annoyed. And then I'm just like sitting there going, yeah, you ain't done jack for me in my career, but look at me now, you know? So yeah, it was just kind of, it was hilarious. But like one of my art teachers, not in my final year, but one of my previous art teachers in previous years, she was amazing. You know, she was really lovely. Again, she couldn't quite understand what I was trying to do, but she was very nice to me. And I did connect with her recently because she's like an art teacher for the correspondence school here in Aotearoa. And I've done a few things with that school. And she's popped in and just said how proud she is of me. You know, she's seen what I've been doing. And so she knew like the potential I had. She just couldn't understand the medium, especially. But she understood like, you know, how creative I was. And so, yeah, that was cool. It was really great to kind of have, you know, a previous teacher, you know, say how proud they are of me and the things I've accomplished.
Do you see that protest as a defining moment in your career now?
I don't necessarily think it's a defining moment in my career now. I think it's just one of those things where I look back and went, oh, okay, I can see, you know, like kind of the foundation of where I am now. So it's not necessarily a defining moment. It's definitely like something that is a strong pillar of the foundation of where I am and how I see the world. And so, yeah, it's just one of the things I just laugh at because I do often get asked if I went to art school and whatnot. I'm just like, no, I failed art in high school. And they're like, what? And I was like, yeah, I'm the guy that drew all the time. You know, I drew in art, I drew in maths, I drew in science, I drew in English, which obviously means I was drawing in detention, but you know, you know, I was just drawing all the time. And after high school, you know, I took a look at animation school and art schools. And to be perfectly honest, what I wanted to learn wasn't being taught. And so rather than putting myself into like extreme student debt, going to an art school, which is like bougie and stuff, I was just like, nah, that's not my environment. So instead of doing that, I just made comics and I learned by doing it rather than kind of theses and all of these studies and stuff. I was like, nah, this is the art form I want to do and no one is teaching it. So I've got to teach it myself. I've got to teach myself how to do it by doing it. So yeah, I've got no formal education, you know, no diplomas, no degrees and no student debt.
How has your identity shaped your art and wrestling careers?
Well, it's interesting because, like, my identity, I'm Samoan, cis hetero male. So, you know, there's some privileges I'm afforded that others don't. But it's weird because I don't necessarily kind of do, like, you can do it overtly or you can do it, like, covertly. I just do me, really. And then things just come out like naturally. I don't really try and force moments. Cause like when you're forcing moments, that's when your voice becomes, disingenuous. And so for me, like with whatever I'm creating, whatever I'm doing, you know, has to come from, a sincere, place of integrity. And so, if something that I create is like, oh, this is like the Samoan language comic in the Olaenga Samoa, that was definitely, this is a great way for me to utilize my skills to promote the Samoan language, culture, and values. But then it's like, I can also make comics that aren't about being Samoan, right? Like the story dictates what it needs. And if you kind of shoehorn, you know, things, it becomes obvious and it becomes tokenistic in that way. So I don't necessarily overtly kind of go like, if I do this, I'm going to do this like a Samoan way. It's like I'm doing something. Actually, this is where this element of Samoan culture will work. And, you know, my work with Disney, I was constantly kind of bringing in those elements saying, hey, yo, actually, this would work better if you bring this element of our culture into the space, and then that actually elevates the story as well as the cultural aspects. So yeah, it's not something that I go in like, because you'll get people, you know, who'll be like, oh, I'm gonna make a Samoan superhero comic. And so their idea is about making a Samoan superhero and not telling a good story. And that's untenable. Like that's like a flash in the pan. But if the story is the key thing, that's the thing that resonates with people. And you wrap the story around the cultural elements. I don't necessarily go into things going like, I'm going to make the Samoan whatever, you know. It's something that organically comes out of the exploration of story.
Has anyone ever asked you to create something, whether it be a character or story, that you didn't fully believe in or want to do?
Yeah, you know, I constantly get, you know, requests, inquiries about, oh, you know, I want to make this like Samoan or like Pacific Avengers, and it's, or like, I want to make this Pacific anime, I want to make a Pacific Dragon Ball Z. And the problem with that is that you're constantly trying to make our version of something that already exists. And I always had to tell people that. It was like, you know, and again, that's the kind of surface level knowledge that these people have of the art form. They see, you know, the Marvel movies. They see like all of these things that come out of like comics and manga, and they're like how big it is. And they're like, oh, we want to jump in on that trend. You know, so it's a very empty kind of view of what of the nuances of comics and stuff. And so I always have to check people when they're just trying to jump on the trend, trying to cash in on the popularity of these art forms, when there's so much more involved, so many nuances and intricacies of these art forms. So I get it all the time, and I just have to check people and just like, yo, you know, this isn't something that you've got to use as proof of concept. This is something that story has to come first. And that's how I operate.
You're listening to Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Bobby McCumber, and I'm speaking with Mikhail Mulipola. Now, you first stepped into the world of wrestling in your mid-20s. Can you walk us through your decision and the first tryout? What was that like?
So, you know, I created my character, Kid Liger. I was originally called Kid Liger. Which was essentially a way for me to live my pro wrestling dream. You know, you grow up loving wrestling as a kid, especially if you're Samoan. You always think to yourself, you'll be an awesome wrestler. So I created this character as a way for me to live that pro wrestling dream. And then Impact Pro Wrestling here in Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland, had a tryout. And I thought, why not give it a go? See what happens. So went to the tryout in Kingsland, in central Auckland. And it was pretty full on, lots of like cardio, lots of running and jumping and squats and burpees and stuff, all of these things to really kind of build your ring cardio. And then we learned how to bump and stuff. And I remember like bumping was all good. And I think I was very, very fortunate that I had enough mass that bumping didn't take too much of a physical toll on me. It was just so much fun. I just remember, like, and even in the tryout, like, even though they're teaching you like very simple things, like getting to throw people around, like that was hilarious. I was like, oh, this is so much fun. I was actually surprised. I surprised myself with how well I thought I did with that tryout, because I found like there's some people that looked really fit and whatnot, but I found that with that tryout and pro wrestling in general, one thing that is very important to the art form of pro wrestling, and something that you can't really teach people, like people have to find it their own way, coordination. Mm. Coordination is key, because you can be jacked, you could be muscly and everything, but if you're unco, you become dangerous. So luckily for me, I was coordinated. It was just kind of that. It was like, So it was just weird. It was like I tried out, and then next thing you know, I got accepted, and now I've been wrestling for 19 years. I've been New Zealand heavyweight champion and New Zealand tag team champion, Aotearoa tag team champion and stuff. So yeah, this is kind of weird. It was just something that I was like, I just give it a go, you know, and see what happens. What's the best that could happen, right? So yeah, end up being a stalwart, a veteran of New Zealand's pro wrestling scene.
Yeah. What lessons have you learned from almost 20 years in wrestling?
Oh, it's fun beating up white people. in a controlled environment without people calling the cops. Also, it sucks. Like, it's always sore. Everything we do in that ring hurts. Like, but it's fun. It's the physicality of it all. Like, the entertainment aspects are so, like, suited to our people, tangata moana. Like, It's got everything we do well, you know, physical, entertainment, you know, showing off, you know, all the stuff. And so, like, it was just really interesting that how easy it kind of felt to be in the ring, to be on that stage, in a sense. But yeah, it's just, it's storytelling. Like, you know, I tell stories through comics and I tell stories through pro wrestling. And whenever I'm in that ring, I just enjoy telling the story. You know, it would just be like, what's the story that this match needs to tell? And then figuring out ways to make that happen and figuring out ways to get the crowd invested in the story you make. And so, it's just really interesting. Like the lessons I've learned in comics, lessons I've learned in pro wrestling, have been interchangeable and have, helped inform how I tell stories. And it adds, like having that kind of knowledge of storytelling in different, mediums, allows me to kind of incorporate things that have never been seen in one medium into another. And so it's just like, for me, it's just telling stories, but there are so many different ways I can tell stories now through the experiences I've had as a comic book artist and as a pro wrestler. And it's just kind of cool. I just enjoy it. Yeah.
How do you approach telling a story in the ring?
Cause pro wrestling is predetermined, you know, and people will try and, discredit the art form of pro wrestling by saying, oh, it's fake. It's like, well, so was your favorite TV show and favorite movie and everything else, right? So it's just really interesting that criticism is how, you know, to pro wrestling in general. But like all of the highs and lows you get from, you know, the other forms of stories is what you incorporate into, pro wrestling. But one of the things I love about pro wrestling, that's unlike any other kind of performance art is like with traditional theater, you're presenting your art to a passive audience. They're like, here is my art. And then they take it in. With pro wrestling has we have a symbiotic relationship. So performers have a symbiotic relationship with the audience, and the energy that we give and the energy that the audience give back really informs the story you tell. And so you're always cognizant of that. When you're telling stories in the ring, you've always got to ensure that the audience is part of that story, because they are part of the story. And the dangers of kind of choreographing like your match too much beforehand is that you've removed the audience from the equation. And so the thing I love about is the symbiotic relationship and the engagement that comes from it, because I know that like a certain action I'm going to commit will bring out a certain reaction from the crowd. And that reaction makes my performance better. And so, that back and forth, symbiotic relationship is something that's kind of, awesome, is probably the most awesome thing about pro wrestling. And the other performance art I can think of that is very kind of, same in that nature of symbiotic relationship between performer and audience is stand-up comedy. Because when you tell your jokes and the crowd laugh, the energy back and forth makes your performance better. You're like, yo, my jokes are hitting. I've got more confidence. Then they're laughing more and all that stuff because your thing. But if your jokes aren't hitting, your performance dies. And so when it comes to storytelling and pro wrestling, you've got to always be cognizant of the audience. You've always got to be like, when it comes to pro wrestling, you know, the result is predetermined. And once I know the result, I'll ask the bookers, the people that kind of put the matches together, I'll be like, what's the story you want me to tell? They're like, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. Okay, cool. And then I'll go to my opponent and I'll be like, here's the beginning. Here's the end. Keep your ears open. I'll tell you what to do in the middle. And then that allows me to figure out what the audience needs in that moment. It allows me to be present because, you know, like, so in that middle bit, I'll just be, the crowd needs a little pick me up. I'll do a little something, get the energy up a bit. So that's how I kind of do a match. You know, I was like, yeah, figure out the beginning, figure out the end, and then I'll just call it on the fly in the middle. Yeah, it just becomes more organic that way.
You have a great following of community on social media and you speak out on a lot of world events and things happening within the community. Why do you use your platform in this way?
Why wouldn't I? It's weird because my my audience on social media grew through my activism. And I've always been vocal about issues, but it was only in the last couple of years that I realized speaking online wasn't going to do it, cut it for me anymore. I need to back up my online presence with offline and be on the ground and be with the people. And it was when I started being with the people that my audience grew on social media, because they were seeing that I was backing up what I was saying. But funny enough, people only saw me in the indoor space, not knowing about all the other stuff I do. And then they start following me. They're like, wait, you work for Disney? I'm like, oh, yeah. And then, wait, you're just like, yeah, I'm a wrestler as well. Yeah. It's just like, it was just because it's just normal to me. But like, people discovered me through activism. And I found it really weird. I was like, all these years I've been doing this art stuff at like a high level, international, professional level. And it was my activism that people start knowing who I am. So it became a really kind of interesting thing. But for me, I don't know, as I said, like earlier, integrity is a huge part of who I am as a person and who I am as an artist. And if you can't back up what you say, if what you're saying you don't actually believe in, what's the point? As an artist, if you're creating work that doesn't say what you believe in, what's the point? And so I think I just kind of took my artistic brain into the activist arena, and people just kind of gravitated towards it. And like these last couple of years, being on the ground, using my skills, my various skills in that activist space, it made me realize how important artists are, the arts are to activism, because the arts are so effective in bringing the very heart of issues, the very heart of emotion to the general public. You know, academia isn't accessible, but arts are. Everyone can create something through art. And when someone makes like a song or a chant or like draws a cartoon or a picture, poster, a photo, right? You feel it straight away. If there's integrity behind it, you feel it. And that's why integrity is key, because you could wrap up your art in fanciful colors or fanciful themes and genres, but you know, and it may not look human on the surface, but deep down, the integrity of the human experience behind the story you're telling is what connects to the people. And so for me, I think as an artist, the activist ideal of like integrity and speaking to the heart of the matter, I think is what made me effective in that space. So it's weird. It's like, it didn't feel like I was moving into a new space. I was moving into a new environment, but I was doing stuff I've been doing for years, just in the new environment. And then people are like, wait, how did you come up with that? I'm like, I don't know. This is just stuff I've been doing all the time. So yeah, for me, integrity, and connection, particularly connection, the integrity is what connects the people. And I love connecting with people. I love what I like calling tangata lalanga, woven people, weaving people, people weaving, you know, through arts and presence, to weave us together to make us stronger as a whole, for the struggles and the liberation and the fights that we find ourselves in.
Are you able to give me an example of how you've used your wrestling and art in your activism?
You know, particularly my pro-Palestine stance, my ring gear has like red, black, white, and green. My kick pads have the Palestinian flag on it. Sometimes I come out to the ring with a kufiya. And then there'd be times like I wore a Kanaki shirt as well in the ring. This is part of me. Like, you know, it may be pro wrestling and some people like to not have politics in sports, but sports are political, especially internationally, because you have international countries going up against each other. That's politics. But for me, this is who I am. And regardless of playing a character in the wrestling ring, that character is still me. It's still a part of me. And so I've always, again, shown parts of me through this character. This character isn't a full detachment of who I am. I can't separate the art from the artists, right? So this character may be a little different from me. It's still me. And so I embrace that. It's like this, I'm still a character, but I'm still a whole person. And so that's kind of how I bring issues to it. You know, I've worn some stuff like for Rainbow Whānau, queer rights and stuff, you know, pro-choice bits and pieces. It's just like, it's like people may be like, oh, don't bring politics into it, but it's like politics are going to be part of it anyway. And especially as a brown person living in the white world, my presence, my existence is political. You know, I can't be apolitical. That's not a luxury I can enjoy. So if my existence is political, I'm going to go all the way and be 100% political. That's kind of how I bring it into the wrestling space. You know, and I've had some really good conversations with some of the fans and stuff. It's really cool. Like some people are like, man, you're like the only wrestler who's been speaking up about the genocide and the Palestinians and stuff. I was like, yeah, because, you know, for a lot of people, you know, there's apathy. There's a lot of apathy. I can't be apathetic.
Just changing gears here now. How do you want your legacy to be remembered?
I don't know. Like, I'm not a huge fan of putting people on pedestals. Not a fan of hierarchies. Not a fan of celebrity worship and all that kind of stuff. Like, because all I am is me. Like, that's all I've ever wanted to be is me. So I don't really want people to kind of deify me in a sense, because A, I'm not worth it, and B, people shouldn't be put on the pedestal in that respect. So it's interesting because like all those spaces I find myself in, people are always shocked that I show up, and I'm like, why wouldn't I? People act like it's a big deal that I show up to stuff. I'm like, it really doesn't take much effort to show up. You know, you don't even have to do anything. You know, just showing up to support, like, is enough. But that's because I'm me. Like, I don't think I'm special. You know, I don't think I'm better than anyone else. I'm just me. So the idea of legacy is like, man, I just want to make sure people kind of get to be themselves. Through sheer willpower, just like Green Lantern, of like doing all these things I've done, expressing myself so freely through arts and everything else, is like, I can't help but be me. In whatever space. And that's a good and bad thing. That gets me into trouble too. But like, I can't help it. Like, being fake, like, there's too much energy and time spent on that, being someone you're not. And I just don't want to dedicate resources to that. So I'm just me. And I hope when I eventually pass, that people just think, man, you know, that guy was just unapologetically himself. And if there's anything I want from that, is that just by being me, I'm hoping that inspires others to be themselves. Because especially in the activist space, being myself, I find it so interesting how being yourself is a radical act. Because I can't help but be me. I'm like, why is everyone so uptight? Like, just be you. Right? But I also understand that I have the luxury to be myself too. So many people, especially in the causes I believe in, so many people are vilified for being themselves. A trans whānau, a whawhawhine, a whātama whānau, right? Ainga. And those people, they try to be themselves, they get vilified, they get attacked. And so for me, if I have the freedom to be myself, I'm going to use that to help others be free. And so that's kind of, again, what motivates me in the activist space is like, I want to show people what can be possible when you get to be yourself. And if you can't be yourself, I'll be there to help you. and support you. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't really care about legacies. I just want to be a good person, really. That's like, I'm only really accountable to myself. And then I guess the communities that I stand for, right? But for me, it's just like, I have to look at myself in the mirror and I have to be all right with it. And so, yeah, other people's opinions of me, doesn't really matter. You know, they don't define me. I just gotta stay true to myself.
Do you have any advice for Pacific youth chasing creative dreams?
Oh, just do it. Yeah, like Nike, just do it. Like, unfortunately, there's no magic tricks. There's no shortcuts. You know, if you want to be able to be successful in anything you do, whatever the pursuit is, doesn't have to be creative like me, or it doesn't have to be artistic. To be sports related or whatnot, you've got to do the thing. Like, it is hours and thousands of hours of doing the thing, and like discipline and hard work and effort to get good at anything. And I often tell people, it's like the more you do it, the easier it gets. It's just never easy. And so yeah, the work. It's hard, it's arduous, it's laborious, but it's worth it.
Mikael Mulipola, thank you so much for joining me from Aotearoa and for being unapologetically you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That was Mikael Mulipola, artist, wrestler and activist. You've been listening to Stories from the Pacific. I'm Bobby McCumber. To hear more stories about unique and incredible people from the Pacific, just search for Stories from the Pacific on ABC Radio Australia. If you or someone you know has an interesting story to share, you can email us at storiesfromthepacific@abc.net.au. This story was produced on the lands of the Yuggera and Turrbal people. I'm hosting this story on the lands of the Kaurna people.